And boy, have we got tyranny, folks. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Bloodlines, simulcasting on Speak Free Radio and Eurofolk Radio. And today we're going to continue with our article by Benjamin Friedman, who exposed the fact that Jesus was not a Jew. And in a book, it's actually a book now, it's fairly extensive, called Facts Are Facts. And he also goes into the stab in the back that the global Jewish hierarchy imposed upon Germany at the called the Weimar Republic, the Paris peace talks, which deprived Germany of victory, even though Germany did not have a single battle on its territory. Germany did not lose the war; it lost the peace. So, welcome everybody. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing very good, very good. In the springtime, so sweet, and now it's starting to get spring here, so that feels very good to see the spring and see more of the sun. So that's very nice.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Kim Smith says, it's very bright here, but the locusts are blocking the sun. Oh, no. So the cicadas, it's supposed to be really a big, major deal here in America this year. Lots of cicadas. 17-year locusts, they're otherwise known as. So we may have to. It's got to be a conspiracy to block out the sun, right? Okay, right. Oh yeah, which reminds me, yeah, because I was at the eclipse last Monday, and we did a show about it 2 weeks ago, and it went off really well. I went to Macanda, Illinois, and there was a cloudless sky. I was invited to a wine tasting party in right near Macanda, Illinois. So I was watching in style with my eclipse glasses on and a glass of wine in one hand and a guidebook in my other hand and telling people a little bit about the eclipse prophecies. But we covered the eclipse prophecies pretty well before the event and how the many different prophetic clues about these paths. So people have to listen to that show we did a couple of weeks ago. And also, I think at the front page of Eurofolk Radio, we have the interview I did with Professor Truth about that. Yeah, but there's another episode that's still missing there, and I'll post that sometime this week because I've been so busy with my travel. So anyway, the eclipse went off without a hitch. And it was perfect timing, and then beautiful sunshine, and then I left for Bardstown, Kentucky, and it rained for 3 days without stop. 3 days without stop. We had several really wonderful meetings of people who are Jew savvy and catching on to Christian identity. And I have to say, Michael, it's really good to be fellowshipping with people. New people who understand the message and understand that the Jews are not Israel. We are Israel, and the Judeo churches need to understand this message as well. Over to you.
Yes, I can understand. Yeah, it sounds fantastic. It's sitting out and drinking some maybe good wine and then looking on this eclipse. So the sounds nice. And as you say, it's also very enlightening, very good for the, what I say, for the soul, for the mind to be in communion with people of like-minded that not always are bitching about what you're saying or being against what you say and or are just superficial. That is just, they don't want to speak about deeper stuff. No. That's something say here in Sweden. No. Don't speak about politics and religion. Yeah but that is right. That is what is important.
Of course. Yeah, well, here in America, the founding fathers were not the only ones responsible for developing the country. The black-robed regiment, which were the pastors of the American Revolution, they got involved in politics. What happened? What happened to Christianity? Who said Christians shouldn't get involved in politics? Oh, it's the 501c3 invented by Lyndon Baines Johnson, that commie half-Jew Zionist that became president while he was senator from Texas. He created the 501c3 legislation, which said the churches should not get involved in politics. But it doesn't apply to synagogues, Michael.
No, of course not.
Always.
They won't get rid of the competition in politics. They won't get rid of us. We're not there. So that's I can guess. Yeah, as you said, Lyndon B. Johnson is half Jew or something like that. So that's then we know why he did it, because they won't get rid of their competition. We are the competition, right? And they won't get rid of us. And they don't want to have Christians in the politics, because because in politics today they are only atheists and they are. They're atheist or Jewish, and very many Jews in it, and that's how the Jews have taken over our countries. They put us on the bench. We are sits there, but the football teams plays full speed up and down and making goals every time we sit on the bench. Still thing.
Yeah, Christians are nothing but bench warmers. And the sermon I preached yesterday in Springfield was about the Church of Laodicea, the lukewarm Christians, right? The only value these lukewarm Christians have is their butts warm the pews. And it's very lukewarm. Even their butts are lukewarm. So, folks, we are wait a minute. Bavaria Man says EFR is silent. Shouldn't be a problem there. Yeah, so I don't know why that should be happening, because it's supposed to be. Speak Free Radio is supposed to be fed into EFR. So, yeah, so you may have to go to Speak Free T. All right, so sorry about that. Can't do anything about it while we're live on the air. So, anyway, I'll have to tell Paul about it, because this has happened before, not too often. But the other thing I want to talk about is Pastor Steve. While I was in Kentucky, I visited Pastor Steve in the nursing home, and he is still totally lame on his left side. His left arm and his left leg are just immovable. He has no control over those parts of his body. So I prayed with him that Yahweh and his angels would heal the left side of his body so he could stand up and walk around. And at the very least, if he can get up out of bed by himself, get in a wheelchair and go to the bathroom, that would be a major plus. So for Pastor Steve Anderson, asking for your prayers, keep him daily in mind, and Yahweh will heal him. And we need him back here on Eurofolk Radio staff. So sorry about the problem here at Eurofolk Radio. The feed from Speak Free Radio should be okay, but I guess it isn't. All right, so let's get back into the document that we have here, and as I put in the chat room here, hold on, I've got to go to the article. Okay, here it is. So we're on page 8, and I'm going to start with the paragraph that begins with the words, "The confusion in the minds of Christians concerning fundamentals of the Christian faith is unwarranted and unjustified." Now, this is a letter he wrote to Dr. Goldstein, who is a Jew who supposedly converted to Catholicism, and that never happens. They're always crypto-Jews. They never truly convert. "It need not exist," he says, the confusion. "It would not exist if the Christian clergy did not aid and abet deceptions responsible for it." Do you think that's an accurate statement, Michael?
That is, I would say, I think it is.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to the Scofield Reference Bible, which I don't think he actually talks about in this book, but go ahead.
That Scofield Reference Bible, just to say, is like putting on a Jewish spectacles upon your head instead of using Christian spectacles upon you. I think also Henry Ford has something to say about that. He also said that we read our Bibles through the Jewish spectacles. We shouldn't do that. That's we should read right. through the Christian spectacles. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, and stop believing Jewish lies about the Bible, right? Such as the Romans killed Christ. It's obvious the Jews killed Christ. Anyway, so Benjamin Friedman understands that the Christian world has been duped into believing the Jewish lies about the Bible, okay? And the fact that starting with the Scofield Reference Bible, Christian clergymen have been bribed, cajoled, threatened, blackmailed, you name it, to teach the Jewish version, which is basically in the King James Bible already, but adding more deceit through the Scofield Reference Bible. Judeo-Christianity today is so far from the actual teachings of the Bible, it's unbelievable. They teach all kinds of garbage, like the Jews, like the Romans killed Christ, like the law has been done away with, dispensationalism, the Jews are the people of Israel, and the Gentiles are non-Jews. It's all nonsense. It's all nonsense. It's all Jewish lies, and the churches are teaching Jewish lies. That's what it's all about, okay? So let's continue here.
And I guess the just a comment. I guess this starts for all those Jewish lies. I guess the starting point is, of course, the Scofield Reference Bible, and also LBJ when he did this with the with those corporations for the churches. I guess that is this timeline for this.
Oh yeah, and then you have to also include the televangelists who are on. They started out on cable TV, and that's all. It's all owned by Jews, and so the only thing the televangelists teach is to loan money or give money to the Jews and you'll be saved. Right? Okay. So this total Jewishness of modern Christianity is simply unbelievable. But Paul prophesied it in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, where he said there'd be a great falling away from the true faith just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. So folks, read 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. It's an amazing prophecy. So let's continue. The Christian clergy may be shocked to learn that they have been aiding and abetting the dedicated enemies of the Christian faith. Many of the Christian clergy are actually their allies, but may not know it. This phase of the current worldwide campaign of spiritual sabotage is the most negative factor in the defense of the Christian faith. Okay? I mean, this is a great summary of what's wrong with modern Christianity. He hasn't figured out, although he hasn't blamed the Jews for it in this paragraph, he will. Countless Christians standing on the sidelines in the struggle see that their Christian faith withering on the vine and about ripe enough to drop into the lap of its dedicated enemies. They can do nothing about it. Their cup is made more bitter for them as they observe this unwarranted and this unjustified ignorance and indifference on the part of the Christian clergy. Well, that's exactly what the Church of Laodicea is, the last age of Christianity before the Judgment Day, Church of Laodicea. Yahshua says, if you be lukewarm, I will spew thee out of my mouth. It can't get any more lukewarm than modern Christianity. And it's apathy. This apathetic attitude by the Christian clergy offers no opposition to the aggressors against the Christian faith. So he understood this. This is the 1950s, folks. Benjamin Friedman totally understood that Judeo-Christianity was already lost. There's no hope for it, folks. You can't revive these denominations. They're done for. They will not survive the Judgment Day. Only the remnant of true Israel will survive the Judgment Day. Retreat can only bring defeat. To obviate surrender to their dictated enemies, the Christian clergy must about face immediately if they expect to become the victors in the invisible and intangible ideological war now being so subversively waged against the Christian faith under their very noses. When will they wake up? So this is written in the 1950s. Have they awakened a little bit yet, Michael? Any sign of life there?
No, I think they've gone even further deep into their little Tunrosa sleep, or I want to say. So they sleep even deeper. That's my judgment of it.
Yeah, for sure. So the churches and the church leadership will never wake up. The only possibility is that the people within those congregations will hear about Christian identity, will hear about the fact that the Jews are not Israelites, and that we Caucasians are the real Israelites, they might hear that from their friends and relatives who are converting, but they'll never hear it from the clergy. The clergy is totally in the employ of international Jewry, whether they know it or not. Continuing, if I were asked to recite in this letter the many manners in which the Christian clergy are confusing the Christian concept of the fundamentals of the Christian faith, it would require volumes rather than pages to tell the whole story. Space alone compels me here to confine myself to the irreducible minimum. I will limit myself here to the most important reasons for this confusion. Brevity will of necessity limit the references cited to support the matters presented in this letter. I will do my best under the circumstances to establish the authenticity of the incontestable historical facts I call to your attention here. Okay, now, I wish that we had a Christian pastor out there in the Judeo-Christian world who could express the confidence that Benjamin Friedman does. Now, he also did convert to Catholicism, and maybe he wasn't a biological Jew. People have suggested that he was actually a white person who was adopted by Jewish parents. So maybe this is why he, because there's no doubt that he sincerely converted against Judaism. He sincerely converted against Judaism. He continues, in my opinion, the most important reason is directly related to your present activities. He's speaking to Dr. Goldstein here. Your responsibility for this confusion is not lessened by your good intentions, as if you had any. As you have heard said so many times, quote, hell is paved with good intentions. The confusion your articles create is multiplied a thousandfold by the wide publicity given to them as a result of the very high regard in which you personally are held by editors and readers across the nation, Christian and non-Christian alike. Your articles are continually reprinted and quoted from coast to coast. So there's a heading here. Misinformed and or duplicitous clergy responsible for parroting the lie that Jesus was a Jew. All right, so finally, we're going to get to the basis of the article that Jesus is not a Jew. What, you want to pick it up here, Michael?
Yes, for sure. Now we get to the interesting details here.
Right. Now his writing style is difficult reading, put it that way. So give it your best shot. I'm stumbling over his words too. All right.
Yeah. So the utterance by the Christian clergy, which confuses Christian the most, is the constant repeated utterance that Jesus was a Jew, and that is bullshit. We know that.
Right.
That also appears to be your favorite theme. The misrepresentation and distortion of an incontestable historic fact is uttered by the Christian clergy upon the slightest pretext. They utter it constantly, also without provocation. They appear to be trigger-happy to utter it. Yeah, they never miss an opportunity.
Jesus was a Jew. Jesus was a Jew. Jesus was a Jew. Right? Here, endless. Okay? But he wasn't. He was a Judahite. Okay?
Yeah, and that's how we get a lie to fit stuck in people's head, is to repeat it a number of times. So that's why they do it.
That's right.
They never miss an opportunity to do so. Informed, intelligent Christian cannot reconcile this truly unwarranted misrepresentation and distortion of an incontestable historic fact by the Christian clergy with information known by them, now to the contrary, which comes to them from sources believed by them to be equally reliable. No, they're not reliable. It comes from Jewish minds.
No.
That's not reliable.
No.
This possesses a serious problem today for the Christian clergy. They can extricate themselves from themselves from this present predicament. Now only be resorted to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. That is the only formula by which the Christian clergy can recapture the lost confidence of Christians. As effective spiritual leaders, they cannot function without this lost confidence. They should make that their first order of business. My dear Dr. Goldstein, you are a theologian of high rank and a historian of note. Of necessity, you also should agree with other outstanding authorities on the subject of whether Jesus was a Jew. These leading authorities agree today that there is no foundations in the fact for the implication, interference, and the inuterance resulting from the incorrect belief that Jesus was a Jew. Inconsistable historic facts and an abundance of other proofs establish beyond the possibility of any doubt the incredibility of the assertion so often heard today that Jesus was a Jew. Without any fear of contradiction, based upon fact, the most competent and the best qualified authorities all agree today that Jesus Christ was not a so-called self-styled Jew. They do confirm that during his lifetime, Jesus was known as a Judean by his contemporaries and not as a Jew. And that Jesus referred to himself as a Judean and not as a Jew. During his lifetime here on earth, Jesus was referred to by contemporary historians as a Judean and not as a Jew. Contemporary theologians of Jesus whose competence to pass upon this subject cannot be challenged by anyone today also referred to Jesus during the lifetime here on earth as Judean and not as a Jew.
Okay, so let me just, since we may have some new listeners who are not familiar with the terminology of the Bible in this regard, in the Old Testament, the word falsely translated as Jew is Judah or Judahite, okay, which is a reference to the exclusive posterity of Judah and his offspring, okay, and his house and his tribe. These people were pure-blooded Judahites of the one of the 12 tribes. That's a Jew is a false translation of that. It should always have been translated as Judah or Judahite. Now, in your King James Version and other versions based on it, which is a Masoretic text, which is one composed by the Jewish rabbis, the Masoretic rabbis, they introduced this false term Jew into the translation. Okay, so this is how they falsely ascribe the terminology of Jew to Jesus, but not just to Jesus, but to the entire house of Judah. Okay, now in the New Testament, the word Judean is a reference to anybody who lived in the territory of Judea, whether they're Judahites, Edomites, Canaanites, or strangers, anybody living in the territory is called a Judean. It is not a racial term, but it is simply a term of residence. So what Benjamin Friedman here is saying is that, well, the word Jew should never have been applied to Jesus except as possibly because he was a Judean by residence. And that's the only way, but he never could be possibly a Edomite or Canaanite Jew. All right, back to you.
Yeah, and that is basically what our nation has become today. To say if someone is Swedish today doesn't mean that they are white anymore. Now it's so damn mixed here.
Yeah,
so
right.
So it's the same now also for all our Western white former nations now, because same if you say an American, that's not per se is a white person either for you. But it's the same there. They could be Mexican, because something else. So
yeah.
It has happened. Exactly has happened now to all our white nation that if you say you are from England or you're from France, not per se that you're white, unfortunately.
Right. Used to be, right. Okay, because the whole world has become Judaized. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
So, inscribed upon the cross when Jesus was crucified was the Latin word Jesus Nazarenus Rex Iudaeorum in Pontius Pilate's mother language. Tongue. No one will question the fact that Pontius Pilate was well able to accurately express his own ideas in his own mother tongue. The authorities competed to pass upon the correct translation into English of the Latin Jesus Nazarenus Rex Iudaeorum. Agree.
Iudaeorum. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Please continue.
That it is Jesus of Nazarene, ruler of the Judeans. There is no disagreement upon that by them. And that is a fair statement.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so it's Jesus Nazarenus Rex Iudaeorum. And Iudaeorum is a reference to Judea, not to the tribe of Judah. Okay? So this is a false statement. It's in one of the Gospels, it says actually a mocking statement, so it's not to be taken seriously. Yahshua did not come to redeem Judeans. He came to exclusively to redeem the lost people of the house of Israel, period. All right, back to you.
During his lifetime here on earth, Jesus was not regarded by Pontius Pilate, nor by the Judeans among whom he dwelt, as King of the Jews. And that word didn't exist even at that time, so that can't be there.
Of course it didn't. Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, there was no letter J in any language really pronounced like J, right, until 1700s. Wherever you encounter the letter J in any language, whether it be Latin, Greek, or what didn't even exist in Aramaic or Hebrew, it was always pronounced like a Y, okay? So there was no such word as Jew. So that's another good reason why it doesn't belong as a translation of the Old Testament. It would be a very bad translation to use a word that didn't exist until the 1700s as a translational word, okay? Back to you.
Sorry. The inscription on the cross upon which Jesus was crucified has been incorrectly translated into the English language only since the 18th century. Pontius Pilate was ironic and sarcastic when he ordered inscribed upon the cross the Latin word Jesus Nazarenus Rex Iudaeorum, about to be crucified. With the approval of Pontius Pilate, Jesus was not being mocked by Pontius Pilate.
Hold on. No, this was not with the approval of Pontius Pilate. He did not agree. He declared Yahshua innocent on multiple occasions, but the Jews, the Edomite Jews and Canaanite Jews of his day, the scribes and Pharisees, threatened Pontius Pilate with exposure to the then reigning Caesar. That if he did not, it was extortion, it was threats, it was blackmail, that they would report him to the current Caesar and they would stop paying tribute, because it was an agreement between the Romans and the Jewish Pharisees that they would collect a tribute for Rome, okay? And that was the I scratch my back, you scratch yours, I'll scratch yours agreement that the Pharisees had with the Romans. So this is a statement that's not quite correct here. Pontius Pilate did not order the death of Jesus. He washed his hands of the entire situation and then turned him over to the Jews, who did the job. Back to you.
Yeah, that's important, because the Jews did kill him, not Pontius Pilate, because it said in the scripture, he washed his hand because of his, he believed Jesus was innocent.
That's right.
So I take it again. About to be crucified with the approval of Pontius Pilate, and that is obviously a lie. Jesus was being mocked by Pontius Pilate. No, he was not mocked by Pontius Pilate.
Yeah.
Pontius Pilate was...
Yeah, the statement was actually mocking, but he was mocking the Jews, not Jesus. Okay? This good man could not be possibly be king of these filthy Jews. That's how it's to be understood.
Pontius Pilate was well aware at the time that Jesus had been denounced, defied, and denied by the Judeans, who alas, finally brought about his crucifixion, as related by history.
Mm-hmm.
Except for his few followers at that time in Judea, all other Judeans abhorred Jesus and detested his teachings and the things for which he stood. Is that really true that every Eugenes abhor him?
No. I think a lot of let's recount the actual events. Since Passover was on let's just say Friday of that year, the 14th day of the month, there was what's called the selection day. That's when the Israelites, the Judahites, not Jews, selected the lamb that they were going to slaughter for a Passover. Okay. And in the Catholic Church, this is called Palm Sunday. That's the day in which Yahshua rode into Jerusalem in triumph to palm leaves and flower petals cast. And basically he rode into Jerusalem, Hosanna in the highest, on a red carpet. Okay. So it was at this point the Pharisees realized they have to kill him because the people were beginning to believe him. So they had to start rumors. They hired mobs to condemn him and mock him and spit on him, et cetera, et cetera. And so after this triumphant ride into Jerusalem on Selection Day, just 3 days later, he was dead. Killed by who? Not by the Romans, the Jews. And so the editor has this note here. This is because they were Edomite Canaanites, ancestors of today's Jews. It was in their nature to hate him. That's says the editor, and that is absolutely correct. Back to you.
Yeah, that deplorable fact cannot be erased from history by time. Pontius Pilate was himself the ruler of the Judeans at the time. He ordered inscribed upon the cross in Latin word, "Jesus Nazarenus Rex." In English, Jesus, a Nazarene ruler of the Judeans. But Pontius Pilate never referred to himself as ruler of the Judeans. The ironic and sarcastic reference of Pontius Pilate to Jesus as ruler of the Judeans can hardly be accepted as recognized by Pontius Pilate of Jesus as ruler of the Judeans. That is inconceivable by any interpretation.
No, it was mocking. It was actually mocking the Judeans, the scribes and Pharisees, that he was their leader. He knew that he wasn't their leader, and he knew that they would never accept him. So the statement that he put on the cross is a total mockery of what's going, what went down. All right, back to you.
Yes. Let's see. Rule that is okay. At the time of the crucifixion of Jesus, Pontius Pilate was the administrator in Judea for the Roman Empire. At that time in history, the area of the Roman Empire included a part of the Middle East. As far as he was concerned, officially or personally, the inhabitants of Judea was Judeans to Pontius Pilate and not so-called Jews, as they have been styled since the 18th century. In the time of Pontius Pilate, there was no religious, racial, or natural group in Judea known as Jews, nor had there been any group so identifiable anywhere else in the world prior to that time.
Not even in Judah. They were called Judahites, not Jews. Okay.
Pontius Pilate expressed little interest as the administrator of the Roman Empire, officially or personally, in the wide variety of forms of religious worship then practiced in Judea. These forms of religious worship extended from phallic worship and other forms of idolatry. And this is from the editor. Practiced by Canaanite Edomites, who were known as Judeans because of their residency in Judea.
Right. They were not Judahites. They were Edomites who just happened. Well, they were invited into Judea by John Hyrcanus, the last fully reigning king of Judah in Palestine. Okay. A big mistake by him. Absolutely horrible mistake by him. Back to you.
To the emerging spiritual philosophy of an eternal, omnipotent and invincible divine deity, the emerging Yahweh, Jehovah.
Yeah.
And this is a little apostrophe yeah. that says then, of course, God's name is Yahweh, not Jehovah, which is a corruption. The worship of Yahweh God was practiced largely by the Judahites, true descendants of the tribe of Judah, and other white descendants of the 12 tribes, such as the Benjaminites.
Good.
Concept which predated Abraham of Bible fame by Pontius Pilate. No, wait. By approximately 2,000 years. As the administrator of the Roman Empire in Judea, it was the official policy of Pontius Pilate never to interfere in the spiritual affairs of the local population. Pontius Pilate's primary responsibility was the collection of taxes to the forwarded home to Rome, not the forms of religious worship practiced by the Judeans from whom these taxes were collected.
Okay, so let me comment here because this is in stark contrast to, let's say, the Assyrians or the Egyptians or even the Babylonians who would oppress the people severely or even destroy the people. So the Assyrians took the Israelites captive and forced them into slavery, abject slavery. And this is typically what empires did. But the Romans decided, well, when we conquer a territory, we'll let the people practice the religion as they want. That way they'll stay pretty happy and we can collect tribute from them every so often. And as long as they stay happy religiously and we don't enslave them per se, we just collect tribute like income tax, right? then we can maintain our power with a minimum of military might. Okay. That was the strategy, and it worked really well. Okay?
As you well know, my dear Dr. Goldstein, the Latin word rex means ruler, leader, in English. During the lifetime of Jesus in Judea, the Latin word rex meant only that the Judean's family with the Latin language. The Latin word rex is the Latin verb rego, regere, rexi. Rectus in English means, as you also well know, to rule, to lead. Latin was, of course, the official language in all the province and administered by the local administrator of the Roman Empire. This fact accounts for the inscriptions on the cross in Latin. With the invasion of the British Isles by the Anglo-Saxons, the English language substituted the Anglo-Saxon king for the Latin equivalent rex used before the Anglo-Saxon invasion. The adoption of king for rex at this late date in British history did not retroactively alter the meaning of Latin rex to the Judeans in the time of Jesus. The Latin rex to them then meant only ruler, leader, as it still means in Latin. Anglo-Saxon king was spelled differently when first used by, but at all times meant the same as rex in Latin, leader of a tribe. During the lifetime of Jesus, it was very apparent to Pontius Pilate that Jesus was the very last person in Judea the Judeans would select as their ruler or their leader.
Correct.
In spite of this situation in Judea, Pontius Pilate did not hesitate to order the inscription of the cross, Asus Nazarenus Rex Iderium. By the wildest stretch of the imagination, it is not conceivable that this sarcasm and irony by Pontius Pilate at the time of the crucifixion was not solely mockery of Jesus by Pontius Pilate and only mockery. Yeah, but it wasn't of Jesus, as you said, Eli. It was the mockery of the Canaanites, of the modern day Jewish people.
Yeah, the Judeans. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
After this reference to Jesus the Nazarene, ruler of the Judeans forthwith proceeded to crucify Jesus upon that very cross. in Latin.
Yes, the Judeans crucified Jesus, not the Romans.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Benjamin Friedman. Yes.
Yeah, that's something that I don't know. That also is something I don't know how prevalent that is in the modern church. Do people still believe it was Romans that killed Jesus?
And teach the Romans killed Jesus. The Jews tell them to teach that. And it's so obviously false. And we'll have to do a show about that. Because it's so easy to prove that the Jews killed Christ. It isn't funny. But, of course, when you tell lies, you expect the people that you hire not to expose the lies. Right? And the Judeo-Christian clergy is the hireling of the international Jew. Back to you.
Yeah. In Latin, in the lifetime of Jesus, the name of the political subdivision in the Middle East, known in modern history as Palestine, was Judea. It was administered by Pontius Pilate as administrator for the Roman Empire, of which it was then a part. The English for the Latin Judea is Judea. English mean Judea is the adjective for the noun Judea. The ancient native population of the subdivision in the Middle East, known in modern history as Palestine, was then called Iudees in Latin and Judea in English. Those words identified the indigenous population of Judea in the lifetime of Jesus. Who can deny that Jesus was a member of the indigenous population of Judea in his lifetime? And of course, you know, my dear Dr. Goldstein, in Latin, the genitive plural of Iudaeus is Judaeorum.
Judaeorum. Yep.
The English translation of the genitive plural of Judaeorum is of the Judeans. It is utterly impossible to give any other English translation to Judaeorum than of the Judeans. Qualified and competent theologians and historians regard this incredible any other translation into English of Jesus Nazarenus Rex Judaeorum. Mm-hmm. Then Jesus, the Nazarene ruler of the Judeans. You must agree that this is literally correct.
And again, Pontius Pilate knew what he was doing. He was mocking the Jews when he said, yeah, the guy you killed is your leader. No, he was mocking the Jews when he put that inscription. And actually, it was written in three languages. It was written in Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. Okay, Benjamin Friedman fails to acknowledge that, but please continue.
At the time of Pontius Pilate was ordering the Jesus Nazarenus Rex Iudaeorum inscribed upon the cross, the spiritual leaders of Judea was protesting to Pontius Pilate not to write that Jesus was the ruler of the Judeans, but to inscribe instead that Jesus, he said, that he was the ruler of the Judeans.
Now, Jesus never said that.
No.
I come not but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel, which is a totally different concept from Judean.
All yeah, right? And didn't that time rabbi say, take that sign down?
Right, yeah, they demanded he take it down, but he refused.
And he said, I have written what I have written.
Right?
The spiritual
leaders. If you don't like it, I'll chop your head off. All right.
The spiritual leaders of Judea made very strong protests to Pontius Pilate against his reference to Jesus as Rex Iudaeorum, insisting that Pontius Pilate was not familiar with the misunderstanding the status of Jesus in Judea. These protests. A matter of historical records, as you know.
Okay, well, this is just more proof that the Jews did not want Jesus to be recognized as their leader. They will never accept him. Okay, yeah. It's just more proof they would not accept him as Messiah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you want to read on some?
Yeah, okay, so we're approaching the break time, but let me do 3 or 4 paragraphs here. Okay, so, yeah, and as I said, his writing style is, it's very, he has very long sentences with multiple clauses, so it's difficult reading.
All right. It is.
Yeah. Okay, let's see, where did you leave off? Blah, 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 blah. Okay,
the spiritual leaders.
Okay, all right, the spiritual leaders in Judea, who were the scribes and Pharisees, and the Sanhedrin, who were primarily Edomites, Canaanites, and the Khazars hadn't joined the religion yet, protested in vain with Pontius Pilate. They insisted that Jesus had said that he was the ruler of the Judeans, rather that he was, but that Pontius Pilate was, quote, not to write that Jesus was the ruler of the Judeans. They did not want anybody to suggest that they would accept Jesus as Messiah or as their ruler. For after all, Pontius Pilate was a foreigner in Judea who could not understand the local situations as well as the spiritual leaders. The intricate pattern of the domestic, political, social, and economic cross currents in Judea interested Pontius Pilate very little as Rome's administrator, although he had to take an interest once the Jews wanted to kill Jesus, right? And he could not understand why they would want to kill this guy who had done nothing wrong. The Gospel by John was written originally in the Greek language, according to the best authorities. In the Greek original, there is no equivalent for the English that Jesus, quote, had said that he was the ruler of the Judeans, unquote. The English translation of the Greek original of the Gospel of John, 1919, reads, "Do not inscribe the monarch Basilius of the Judeans, Judeos, but that he himself said, 'I am monarch Basilius of the Judeans, Judeos.'" Well, he never did say that. Judeo is the Greek for the Latin word Basilius in Greek. The English ruler, or its alternative, leader, defined the sense of the Latin rex and Greek Basilius as they were used in the Greek and Latin Gospel of John. Pontius Pilate washed his hands of the protest by the spiritual leaders in Judea, who demanded of him that the inscription on the cross authored by Pontius Pilate be corrected in the manner they insisted upon. Pontius Pilate very impatiently replied to their demands, "What I have written, I have written. The inscription on the cross remained what it had been, Jesus Nazarenus Rex Judaeorum, or Jesus the Nazarene, ruler of the Judeans," in English. Okay, now he was a Nazarene, but he was not the ruler of the Judeans. And there has to be irony in Pontius Pilate doing this. As we said, he was mocking the Jews, not Jesus, as I think Benjamin Friedman implies. Let's continue. The Latin quotations and words mentioned in this letter are verbatim quotations and the exact words which appear in the 4th century translation of the New Testament into the Latin by St. Jerome. This translation is referred to as the Vulgate edition of the New Testament. It was the first official translation of the New Testament into Latin made by the Christian Church. Since that time, it has remained the official New Testament version used by the Catholic Church. The translation of the Gospel of John into Latin by St. Jerome was made from the Greek language in which the Gospel of John was originally written, according to the best authorities on this subject, although it's pretty apparent these days that John also wrote a Hebrew version of the Gospel. What Pontius Pilate really wrote on the cross and what he meant. Okay, let's see. The English translation of the Gospel of John 19:19 from the original text of the Greek language reads as follows, quote, "Pilate wrote a sign and fastened it to the cross, and the writing was, 'Jesus the Nazarene, the monarch of the Judeans,'" unquote. In the original Greek manuscript, there is mention also made of the demands upon Pontius Pilate by the spiritual leaders in Judea that Pontius Pilate alter the reference on the cross to Jesus as ruler of the Judeans. They didn't like that expression, ruler of the Judeans. The Greek text of the original manuscript of the Gospel by John establishes beyond any question or doubt that the spiritual leaders in Judea at that time, who were Pharisees, from the editorial note here, who were Pharisees, many of them Edomite Canaanites, editor, had protested to Pontius Pilate that Jesus was not the ruler of the Judeans, but only had said that he was the ruler of the Judeans. Well, he never did say that either. There is no factual foundation in history or theology today for the implications, inferences, and innuendos that the Greek Judaeus, the Latin Judaeus, or the English Judean ever possessed a valid religious connotation. No, it's simply a reference to people living in Judea. That's all the word means. It can't be a reference to the religion practiced by Judah or Israel either, or to the religion practiced by the Pharisees. It's simply a territorial word. In their three respective languages, these three words have only indicated a strictly topographical or geographical connotation. In their correct sense, these three words in their respective languages were used to identify the members of the indigenous native population of the geographic area known as Judea in the lifetime of Jesus. Now, I have to comment here because when John Hyrcanus began circumcising Edomites around 121 BC and inviting them to become citizens of Judea, they did not become Judahites or Israelites. They only became, like here in America, America used to be an exclusively white nation. But then Jews arrived and started destroying our citizenship rules and started importing non-whites. And so now we have Asian Americans, Black Americans, and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's what happened here. When John Hyrcanus invited these Edomites to come in, now we have Edomite Judeans, but not Edomite Judahites, not Jewish Judahites, no such thing as Jewish Israelites either. You have to understand that the word Jewish means Judean in this context, and that's all it means, okay? So an Edomite living in the territory of Judea, that's what the word Jew means here, okay? All right, so, but he says that that's only translation. That word Jew, as he correctly points out, was never used by anybody until the 17th century, okay? So it's a false translation even of Judean. Although we can say we know that the Jews are the descendants of these Edomite Jews of the time. Okay? So let's continue. During the lifetime, blah, 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 blah. Let's see. Okay. So there was no religion known as Judaism either. Okay? You can't impose the word Judaism on any of this. It was the religion of the Pharisees. Although today we understand that the religion of the Pharisees and Judaism are the same thing, but Judaism can never be applied to the house of Judah or any of the Israelites because they never practiced the religion of the Edomite Pharisees. Okay, you see how confusing this is? It's because people have been trained to believe that the house of Israel practiced a religion called Judaism. They never did, because that religion was created by the Pharisees during the 100 years before Christ. So he says, no cult or sect existed by such a name. That is correct. Judaism is a cult. And even at that time, it was known as Pharisaism. It is an incontestable fact that the word Jew did not come into existence until the year 1775. Prior to 1775, the word Jew did not exist in any language. The word Jew was introduced into the English for the first time in the 18th century when Sheridan used it in his play, The Rivals. And he's quoting here, I guess it's Act 2, Scene 1. She shall have a skin like a mummy and the beard of a Jew. Prior to this use of the word Jew in the English language by Sheridan in 1775, the word Jew had not become a word in the English language. Shakespeare never saw the word Jew, as you will see. Shakespeare never used the word Jew in any of his works, the common general belief to the contrary notwithstanding. In his Merchant of Venice, 5-3-161, Shakespeare wrote as follows. What is the reason I am a Jew? I-E-W-E. Hath not a Jew eyes? Okay, because the letter J had not entered the English language yet. In the Latin, St. Jerome, 4th century Vulgate edition of the New Testament, Jesus is referred to in the genitive plural, Judaeus, in the Gospel of John, reference to the inscription on the cross, Judaeorum. It was in the 4th century that St. Jerome translated into Latin the manuscripts of the New Testament from the original languages in which they were written. This translation by St. Jerome is referred to still today as the Vulgate edition by the Roman Catholic Church authorities who use it today. Okay, so the next section is entitled Origin of the Word Jew. And so, again, this is an extremely important topic. Anybody who is new to Christian identity should understand that the word Jew is a fabrication by the people today known as Jews to insinuate themselves into the biblical record, especially into the Old Testament, which they never were a part of. The Jews we know today are descendants of the Edomites, Canaanites, Kenites, the descendants of Cain, and these Pharisees in the New Testament. They were never part of any of the 12 tribes ever. And still, and never will be, because they are the avowed enemies of the 12 tribes of Israel and avowed enemies of the Adamic race. Okay? This is something that every white person needs to know. All right. So, folks, we're coming up on break time. So, we're going to play some music here and we'll take a little break. And this is a song by a friend of mine called It's So Dark. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back, everybody. And there's an ongoing theme here, folks, that Jesus was not a Jew, and Benjamin Friedman is doing his absolute best to explain why. And this is the next section here is the origin of the word Jew. And this is, well, it's very detailed, so let's get into it. Jesus is referred as a so-called Jew, with quotes, for the first time in the New Testament in the 18th century. Now, of course, he's talking about the letter J being inserted. And in the Old Testament, I don't know what the Latin Vulgate had for Jew in the Old Testament. It was probably Judah, but it was based on translating the word Judah or Judah or Yehudi in the original Hebrew, okay? Yehudi or Yehuda were not Jews. They were Judahites. They were members of the pure-blooded house or tribe of Judah and nobody else. So, I mean, a perfect example that proves that modern Jews cannot possibly be of Judah is the fact that the Israeli state defines a Jew as anyone born of a Jewish woman, no matter who the father is, okay? But the Old Testament definition of a Judahite is one who is born of a Judahite father and a white woman, primarily an Israelite woman, okay? There's a vast difference in the definition of these two words. So obviously the Jewish definition, the Israeli definition, does not correspond with the biblical definition of the word Judah. So let's continue. Jesus is first referred to as a so-called Jew in the revised 18th century editions in the English language of the 14th century. First translations of the New Testament into English, and of course the King James Version is filled with this error. The history of the origin of the word Jew in the English language leaves no doubt that the 18th century Jew, the word, is the 18th century contracted and corrupted English word for the 4th century Latin Judaeus, found in St. Jerome's Vulgate edition. Of that, there is no longer doubt. The available manuscripts from the 4th century to the 18th century accurately trace the origin and give the complete history of the word Jew in the English language. In these manuscripts are to be found all the many earlier English equivalents extending through the 14th centuries from the 4th to the 18th century. From the Latin Judaeus to the English Jew, these English forms included successively, and, well, there's so many, I'll just recite a few here. Jew spelled G-Y-U, Jew spelled G-I-U, U spelled I-U, U spelled I-U-U, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So all these words are an attempt to recreate the word Judean, and that's it. They're not based on the word Judah or Judahite at all. With the rapidly expanding use in England in the 18th century for the first time in history of the greatly improved printing presses, unlimited quantities of the New Testament were printed. These revised 18th century editions of the earlier 14th century first translations into the English language were then widely distributed throughout England and the English-speaking world among families who had never possessed a copy of the New Testament in any language. In these 18th century editions with revisions, the word Jew appeared for the first time in any English translations. The word Jew, as it was used in the 18th century editions, has since continued in use in all elections or editions of the New Testament in the English language. The use of the word Jew was thus stabilized. Again, as we've been saying here on Eurofolk Radio for years, the word Jew does not belong in the Old Testament. And where you see it in the New Testament, it can only be a reference to those Edomites who are pretending to be Israelites, okay, because they still do that today, so the term fits. He continues, as you know, my dear Dr. Goldstein, the best-known 18th century editions of the New Testament in English are the Reims, the Douay edition, and the King James Authorized edition. The Reims-Douay translation of the New Testament into English was first printed in 1582, but the word Jew did not appear in it. The King James authorized translation of the New Testament into English was begun in 1604 and first published in 1611. The word Jew did not appear in it either. The word Jew appeared in both these well-known editions in their 18th century revised versions for the first time. So the word Jew is a very recent vintage, Michael. So why, why do people think that these Edomites are Jews or Judahites by mistake, right? Well, why do our people believe
Yeah, but that's as we spoke before. That is this propaganda that's repeating this lie all the time. And what I did when you read here, I was searching also in this the Septuagint and search for the word Jew. Yeah, you get the word Jew up. Huh? You find the word Jew, but this doesn't have any strong concordance number on it. It's just J. So it's, yeah,
right.
So that was interesting. Otherwise,
yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, because if you're searching like King James and finding the word Jew, you can find the translation to be Idumeans. Here, I don't even find that one. So here, I don't even find that. It's only a G. So
yeah. Well, the Septuagint is only a translation of the Old Testament. Now, it was a translation of the Old Testament by Judahites, pure-blooded Judahites, who were descendants of Adam through Seth, the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, etc. These are Judahites, not Jews. We cannot stress enough that the word Jew should never be applied to Judahites or Israelites. But today the Jews claim, well, we're the only people left of the 12 tribes, right? Oh, no, sorry. You never were one of the 12 tribes. You're liars. You're impersonators. That's why my book, The Great Impersonation, is listed at Money Tree Publishing. And in addition to all these other books here, I'm going to, like Jewish Supremacism, David Duke, excellent work by him, 6 Million, Factor Fiction, Europa, The Last Battle, excellent stuff, folks. The Truth About Hitler in Black and White, written by a black guy who's Jew savvy. More and more blacks are becoming Jew savvy. Myth of German Villainy, Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, and Henry Ford's The International Jew, Volumes 1 and 2. And, of course, my book, The Great Impersonation, all available at moneytreepublishing.com. Please go there and avail yourself of the excellent publications he has there, David Gaharry. And he also has another publishing company which publishes books and documentaries about the assault on the liberty by the Jews, right? No, by the Jews, the Hebrew-speaking, or their version, their modern Hebrew version of Hebrew, and it was an assault, an attack on our country by the Jews of the Israeli state, and not some accident. It was a deliberate attack against the liberty. So you'll find that out. And you can research his book or just contact him, and he'll give you the contact information of how to get those books, all right? So, anyway, let's get back to it. So go ahead and take over from this point, if you will, Brother Michael.
Yes. I think then we start, and then just also one more comment. When I search in the Septuagint, of course, you don't find the word Jew in the Old Testament. You don't. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's just state the obvious that the word Jew was never used by the Hebrew speaking people. It was never used by the Latin speaking people. It was never used by the Greek speaking people. That is a recent, very recent translation of the word Judah and also of the word Judean. That's what it is. So you really can't have it both ways, because a Judahite is a pure-blooded descendant of Judah, and a Judean is merely a resident of Judea, having no racial connotation whatsoever. Yet we have the word Jew translating both these words into English. So you can see the confusion that this causes. Back to you.
Yes, it really does. As you know, my dear Dr. Goldstein, the best-known 18th-century editions of the New Testament in English are the Reims Douai edition and the King James Authorized edition. Yeah, not really, maybe the King James.
Yeah. Yeah, it was King James, right? There was still no J yet. Okay. And that's if you have a copy of the 1611 version, you will not see the letter J in that version. Back to you.
The Reims Douai translation of the New Testament into English was the first printed in 1582, but the word Jew did not appear in it. The King James Authorized translation of the New Testament into English was begun in 1604 and first published in 1611. The word Jew did not appear in it either. The word Jew appeared in both these well-known editions in their 18th century revised version for the first time.
Oh, linguistic history. Do you think that's important, Michael? Linguistic history?
It's okay. Very important.
Amen.
And okay. I know from my personal experience with linguistics, it wasn't my maybe favorite topic, but I know how important it is. Maybe they made it so boring. So it's very important.
Yeah. Yes, extremely important. Yes, okay.
Countless copies of the revised 18th century edition of the Reims Douai and the King James translation of the New Testament into English were distributed to the clergy and the laity throughout the English-speaking world. They did not know the history of the origin of the word Jew, nor did they care. They accepted the English word Jew as the only and accepted form of the Latin Iudaeus and the Greek Iudaeus. How could they be expected to have known otherwise? The answer, they could not, and they did not. It was a new English word to them. When you studied Latin in your school days, you were taught that the letter I in Latin, when used as the first letter in a word, is pronounced like the letter Y in English. When it is the first letter in a word like yes, youth, and yacht, the I in Judeus is pronounced like an A and Y in yes, youth, and yacht in English. In all the 4th century and 18th century forms of the 18th century Jew, the letter I was pronounced like the English Y in yes, youth, and yacht. The same is true of the G or Gui when it was used in place of the letter I. You maybe see its Jewishness, yacht. That is expensive stuff. So, I mean,
yeah, right. Right. Yeah, yacht. A yacht in English means a huge sailboat, or not a sailboat, but a private boat for having parties, right? Interestingly, in German, the word yacht means a lot of noise, a commotion. Very interesting. We could do a word study on that. All right, back to you.
The present pronunciation of the word Jew in modern English is developed of recent times. In the English language today, the J in Jew is pronounced like the J in English, justice, jolly, and jump. This is the case only since the 18th century. Prior to the 18th century, the J in Jew was pronounced exactly the Y in the English, yes, youth, and yacht. Until the 18th century, and perhaps the later than the 18th century, the word Jew in English was pronounced like the English Jew or Hugh, and the word Jews like Jews or Hughes. The present pronunciations of Jew in English is the pronunciation acquired after the 18th century.
Now, it's interesting that in the Spanish, which is one of the languages offshoot of the Anglo-Saxon, It's pronounced Jesus. It's pronounced like an H. The J is pronounced like an H. So you have to understand that the letter J, it cannot possibly be used as a translation for Judah. So in every single case where you see the word Judah, keep it Judah or Judah. All right. Don't change it to Jew. That is a false translation. Back to you.
The German language still retains the Latin original pronunciation. The German Jude is the German equivalent of the English Jew. The J in the German Jude is pronounced exactly like the English Y in just youth and jocht. The German J is the equivalent of the Latin I, and both are pronounced exactly like the English Y in just youth and jocht. The German Jude is virtually for the first syllable of the Latin Odeus, and it's pronounced exactly like it. The German Jude is the German contraction and corruption of the Latin Judeus.
Okay.
Just as the English Jew is the contraction and corruption of the Latin Judeus. The German J is always pronounced like the English Y in Jess, Youth, and Jagd. When it is the first letter of a word, the pronunciation of the J in German Jude is not an exception to the pronunciation of the J in German. Huh. The English language, as you already know, my dear Dr. Goldstein, is largely made up of words adopted from foreign languages. After their adoption by the English language foreign word, when were then adopted by contracting their spelling and corrupting their foreign pronunciations to make them more easily pronounced in English from their English spelling. This process of first adopting foreign words and then adopting them by contracting their spelling and corrupting their pronunciation resulted in such new word in the English language as cab from the French cabriolet and many thousands of other words similarly from their original foreign spelling. Hundreds of other must come to your mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so as being bilingual, having grown up speaking German, there is no letter J in German. It's Jude, it's Judeos, but this was the original pronunciation in English as well, okay? So the word Jew is a very recent made-up word falsely used to translate Judah. It's not totally false to translate Judean as Jew because These Judeans, these non-Judahite Edomites, are today known as Jews. They want to be known as Jews, and so let's let them have the word Jew. It only applies to those people, these non-Israelite, non-Judahite, self-described Edomite Jews who apply that word to themselves. So let's let them have that word, but we should never apply it to any of the 12 tribes of Israel, especially to the tribe of Judah. Back to you.
I agree, and never to Jesus Christ. He would be angry if you call him a Jew. You call him Satan?
Yeah, right. Okay.
By this adapting process, the Latin Judaicus and the Greek Judeos finally merged in the 18th century as Jew in the English language. The English-speaking people struggled throughout 14 centuries seeking to create for the English language an English equivalent of the Latin Judeus and the Greek Ideos, which could be easily pronounced in English from its English spelling. The English Jew was the resulting 18th century contracted and corrupted from the Latin Judeus and the Greek Ideos. The English Jew is easily pronounced in English from its English spelling. The Latin Judeus and the Greek Ideos cannot be easily pronounced in English from the Latin and Greek spelling. They were forced to coin a word. I have a bit hard time to see the difference in the Latin and Greek pronunciations when I read it.
Yeah, well, the pronunciation is exactly the same because the I is pronounced like a Y, okay? So Latin Judeus, it's a D-A-E, U, and the Greek is D-A-I-O, but it's pronounced exactly the same, Eudaios, okay?
Eudaios, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, now let's see, let me pick up the text again. The earliest version of the New Testament in English from the Latin Vulgate edition is the Wycliffe or Wycliffe edition, published in 1380. In the Wycliffe edition, Jesus is there mentioned as one of the Jews.
Okay, that answers a question that I was going to ask. How did the earlier translators, before the King James Version, pronounce or spell Jew? And here's the answer: U, I E W E S, use. Okay, so very good. Thank you. Okay.
That was the 14th century English version of the Latin, Eudaios, and was pronounced hevesem in the plural and Jue, pronounced hewi in the singular. In the 1380 Wycliffe edition in English, the Gospel by John, and this is then 1919, reads, oh, okay, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews.
Prior. Yeah, right. I is pronounced like a Y. Use. Yeah.
Prior to the 14th century, the English language adopted the Anglo-Saxon king, together with many other Anglo-Saxon words, in place of the Latin Rex and the Greek Basileus. The Anglo-Saxon also meant tribal leader. In the Tyndale edition of the New Testament in English, published 1525, Jesus was likewise described as one of the Jews. In the Coverdale edition, published in 1535, Jesus was also described as one of the Jews. In the Coverdale edition, the Gospel by John, 1919, reads, Jesus the Nazareth, king of the U.S. In the Cranmer edition published in 1539, Jesus was again described as one of the U.S. in the Geneva edition published 1540 to 1557. Jesus was also described as one of the Jews in the Reims edition published in 1582. Jesus was described as one of the Evers in the King James edition, published in 1604 to 1611, also known as the Authorized Version. Jesus was described again as one of the Jews. The following of the Latin Eudaios were used, which were current at the time these translations were made.
Yeah, no, I also have to point out that many of these translators and theologians knew Latin very well, and they knew Greek very well also. So they were fluent in those languages, and for them to adopt the J in front of these words was new to them, right? But as he said, in 1775, the word J appeared in English, and so they gradually adopted it into the language, but never before. So you can see the close similarity between you and you in the Greek and the Latin, and Eudaios and Eudaios in the Greek and the Latin, they're virtually identical. All right, back to you.
The translation into English of the Gospel by John 1919 from the Greek, in which it was originally written, reads, do not inscribe the monarch of the Judeans, but that he himself said, I am monarch. In the original Greek manuscripts, the Greek Basileus appears for monarch. In the English and the Greek Eudaios appears for Judeans. In the English, in Greek is Judea in English. Eudaios in Greek is Judeans in English. There is no reason for any confusion.
That's correct. Should not be any confusion at all. It's the word Jew that causes all the confusion, all right?
Yes. My dear Dr. Goldstein, If the general accepted understanding today of the English Jew and Judean conveyed the identical implications, interference, and innuendos.
Inferences and innuendos. An innuendo is a suggestion, a false suggestion of the meaning of a word. Innuendo. Okay. All right. So here, let me read. Yeah, let me read this sentence. If the generally accepted understanding today of the English Jew and Judean conveyed the identical implications, inferences, and innuendos as both rightly should, it would make no difference which of these two words was used when referring to Jesus in the New Testament or elsewhere, okay? And he should never be referred to as a Jew. Back to you.
Thank you. But the implications, interference, the innuendos today conveyed by these two words are as different as black is from white. The word Jew today is never regarded as a synonym for a Judean, nor is Judean regarded as a synonym for a Jew.
Okay.
Jewish money and propaganda behind the Jesus was a Jew myth.
Okay, very good.
As I explained, when the word Jew was first introduced into the English language in the 18th century, its one and only implication.
Interference, yeah.
And innuendo was Judean.
Innuendo.
Innuendo.
Yeah.
These words.
However, yeah, you use a lot of words you're not familiar with. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. However, during the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, a well-organized and well-financed international pressure group created a so-called secondary meaning for the word Jew among the English-speaking peoples of the world. This so-called secondary meaning for the word Jew bears no relation whatsoever to the 18th century connotation of the word Jew. It is a misrepresentation.
Yes, yeah, and so is the word Gentile. Another invented word. All right, back to you.
The secondary meaning of the word Jew today bears as little relations to its original and correct meaning as the secondary meaning today, as for the word camel, bears the original correct meaning of the word camel. Or the secondary meaning for the word ivory bears the original and correct meaning of the word ivory.
Hold on. I think the original meaning of the word ivory is that bone of an elephant or a rhino. Maybe not a rhino, but the creatures that have tusks. Okay, but then the secondary meaning is the color of that bone. Okay, so the primary and secondary meanings are typically very closely related. But what he's saying here is that the new meaning of the word Jew bears no relationship whatsoever to the original meaning. Back to you.
The secondary meaning today for the word camel is a cigarette by that name, but its originally and correct meaning is a desert animal by the ancient name. The secondary meaning of the word ivory today is a piece of soap, but its original and correct meaning is the tusk of a male elephant. The secondary meaning of the words often become the general accepted meanings of the word formerly having entirely different meanings. This is accomplished by the expenditure of great amounts of money for well-planned publicity. Today, if you ask for a camel, someone will hand you a cigarette by the name. Today, if you ask for a piece of ivory, someone will hand you a piece of soap by the name. You will never receive either a desert animal or a piece of the tusk of a male elephant. That must illustrate the extent to which these secondary meanings are able to practically eclipse the original and correct meaning of words in the minds of the general public. The secondary meaning for the word Jew today has practically totally eclipsed the original and correct meaning of the word Jew when it was introduced as a word in the English language. This phenomenon is not uncommon. And that's a good allegory how they change the word's meaning by giving it product name or something like that. So then you have changed the name. People don't think about it as in the primary meaning.
Yeah. So Judeo simply means a resident of the territory of Judea. That's all it ever meant. Okay. But now, once the firmly established the word Jew in your mind, then they use it to translate the word Judah from the Old Testament, which was a very cunning word trick, a very cunning word trick. Back to you.
The United States Supreme Court has recognized the secondary meaning of words. The highest court in the land has established as basic law that secondary meaning can acquire priority right to the use of any dictionary word. Well-planned and well-financed worldwide publicity throughout every available media by well-organized groups of so-called or self-styled Jews for these centuries has created a secondary meaning for the word Jew, which has completely blacked out the original and correct meaning of the word Jew. There can be no doubt about that. There is not a person in the whole English-speaking world today who regard a Jew as a Judean in the literal sense of the word. Mm-hmm. That was the correct and only meaning in the 18th century. The general accepted secondary meaning of the word Jew today, with practically no exceptions, is made up of four almost universally believed theories. These four theories are that a so-called or self-styled Jew is, one, a person who today professes the form of religious worship known as Judaism. Two,
that's correct. That's what the word Jew means today, no doubt. Okay. Yeah.
Two, a person who claims to belong to a racial group associated with the ancient Semites.
Oh. Ooh, no, that's false.
No, that's not true.
Right? Yeah.
A person, the descendants of an ancient nation which thrived in Palestine in Bible history. A person directly the descendants of an ancient nation which thrived in Palestine in Bible history. I don't know. Yeah, maybe you can say they are a nation, but yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, it's obviously a reference to Judah. Right.
Yeah, I think it is, but that's true. That's not true.
Yeah, but so it's another false definition, right? However, when Bibi Netanyahu gets on television and said, "We Jews have returned to our ancient homeland," he's not exactly lying because the Edomites lived there for 100 years before the time of Christ. So, in a sense, it is their ancient homeland, but that does not make them Israelites. Okay.
No,
so you can lie by telling the truth because people falsely assume you mean something else by the words, okay?
Yeah, but they call themselves Israeli, not Israel.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And four, and this is not true either when I read it, sorry. A person blessed by divine intentional design and with certain superior cultural characteristics denied to other racial, religious, and national groups, all rolled into one. And that is not true.
Yeah, that's not true of them anyway. Okay. Right, and so this is a really excellent exposition of how words can acquire new meanings. And the new meanings, as he uses the word eclipse, the new meanings eclipse the original meanings of the words. And the modern Judeo-Christian has no clue as to how these meanings have changed and how the Jews deliberately have changed these meanings. Okay? And as he says, spent millions of dollars on propaganda to claim that they are the Judahites of the Old Testament, which they are not.
Yes, he only had one of those claims here is maybe correct. The other one is lies.
That's a strictly modern definition. The person who today professes the form of religious worship known as Judaism, but there was no such name. Judaism is not a word you will find even in the translations of the Old Testament, because there was no such religion. It was Mosaism, okay? Or simply the way, as Yahshua calls it in the New Testament, the way, the prophets, the law and the prophets. That was the way. There was no such word as Judaism. That's another made up word, but the Jews do practice a religion called Judaism, but it's not the religion of the Old Testament. Okay. Again, people assume that Judaism is the religion of the Old Testament. It is not. Okay. So I hope we're exploding the myth of Jewish, or the Jewish origin in the Old Testament Israelites. It's a total myth. It's a lie. Where people have to understand that Judaism is a religion of lies. It's not the religion of Moses. Back to you.
The present generally accepted secondary meaning of the word Jew is fundamentally responsible for the confusion in the minds of Christians regarding elementary tenets of the Christian faith. It is likewise responsible today to a very great extent for the delusion of the devotion of countless Christians for their Christian faith.
Delusion, right.
The implications, interference, and innuendos.
That's tough for me to pronounce this one.
Of the word Jew today to the preponderance.
He's using a lot of words you're not familiar with.
Yeah, he does. Okay. This is, I don't know Jewish tactics. Yeah. I don't know using those fancy
right.
words.
Right, yeah. He is a Jew after all. just kidding, folks. All right.
Majority of intelligent and informed Christians is contradictory and in complete conflict with incontestable historic fact. Christians who cannot be fooled any longer are suspect of the Christian clergy who continues to repeat and repeat and repeat ad nauseum their pet theme song, Jesus was a Jew. It actually now approaches psychosis.
Oh, he's absolutely right about that. It is a Judeo-Christian psychosis. Okay, we only have about 20 minutes left, so let me pick it up from here. And, you know, feel free to comment as I read along, okay? Let's see. Yeah, it now actually approaches a psychosis. Next paragraph. Countless Christians know today that they were brainwashed by the Christian clergy on the subject Jesus was a Jew. Well, not so many. Unfortunately, the vast majority of Christians were brainwashed in this manner, certainly for the 20th century and beyond. And here the editor states, we think Mr. Friedman is overestimating on this point. All too few Christians have realized the truth. Editor, most of them simply leave the faith altogether because the resentment they feel is not yet apparent to the Christian clergy. Christians now are demanding from the clergy, quote, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and they will never get it. It is now time for the Christian clergy to tell Christians what they should have told them long ago. Of all religious groups in the world, Christians appear to be the least informed of any on the subject, and that's the least informed of people on any subject, for that matter. Have their spiritual leaders been reckless with the truth? Of course they have. They've been bribed and blackmailed, and in many cases bludgeoned if they don't follow the Jewish line. And, you know, deprived of, if they don't follow 501c3 regulations, then they will be deprived of their pensions, okay? And they will be cast out of their congregations. That's the type of pressure that these pastors are under. Countless intelligent and informed Christians no longer accept unchallenged assertions by the Christian clergy that Jesus in his lifetime was a member of a group in Judea which practiced a religious form of worship then, which is today called Judaism. Yeah, I wish this were true, but unfortunately, I think the ignorance today is far worse than it was then. Or that Jesus in his lifetime here on earth was a member of the racial group, which today includes the preponderant majority of the so-called or self-styled Jews in the world, or that the so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world today are the lineal descendants of the nation of, in Judea, of which Jesus was a national in his lifetime here on earth, namely Judah, or that the cultural characteristics of so-called or self-styled, see, these are long sentences, folks, difficult reading, or where was I? Or the self-styled Jews throughout the world, they correspond with the cultural characteristics of Jesus during his lifetime here on earth and his teachings while he was here on earth for a brief stay. Christians will no longer believe that the race, religion, nationality, and culture of Jesus and the race, religion, nationality, and culture of so-called or self-styled Jews today or their ancestors have a common origin or character. Well, this is what Christians should believe, but they're totally still in the dark. The resentment of by Christians is more ominous than the Christian clergy suspect. Well, maybe there was a rumbling in the 1950s, because I think the reason why in the 1950s in America there was a very, very strong anti-communist movement and the realization that many of these communists were in fact Jews was also prevalent in those days. But I don't think there was any, they made any connection to the Jews and communism and the corruption of the Bible. I don't think they realized that. Maybe a few did, but not very many. Christians everywhere today are seeking to learn the authentic relationship between the so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world today and the Judeans who populated Judea before, during, and after the time of Jesus. Christians now insist that they be told correctly by the Christian clergy about the racial, religious, national, and cultural background of the so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world today and the basis for associating these backgrounds with the racial, religious, he's repeating these phrases over and over again, racial, religious, and national cultural background of Jesus in his lifetime in Judea. Well, I can see, given the fact that there was this very strong anti-communist movement, and thanks to Joe McCarthy and a few other patriots, even Richard Nixon, that communism is largely Jewish, the Jews had to do something. So they persecuted Joe McCarthy and any, John Birch Society and any other group that was informing people that the Jews are the authors of communism. And could the authors of communism be true Judahites or true Israelites? I don't think so. Okay. So the Jews had to nip that in the bud. And that's why they persecuted Joe McCarthy and had to, claim that their origin is with Israel and Judah. And so to diffuse the negative publicity they were getting about communism. So let's continue. The intelligent and informed Christians are alerted to the exploded myth that the so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world today are the direct descendants of the Judeans amongst whom Jesus lived during his lifetime here on earth. So they are Judeans, but not Judahites. And here's an insert by the editor. Mr. Friedman is somewhat mistaken on this point. Today's Jews are largely descendants of the Edomite Canaanites who occupied the melting pot nation of Judea during the time of Jesus. That's good. That's a melting pot nation. A much smaller racial component of Judea during that time were pure-blooded descendants of the tribe of Judah. Most of them had left. Most of them had already left. And a smattering of other pure-blooded whites through the other tribes. This explains why some of the people followed Jesus and others hated him. Those who were not of his blood were in the latter category. It should be noted that the religious establishment was run by Edomites, so says the editor, and that is 100% correct. However, I would add, there were also traitor Israelites, traitor Judahites, who for filthy lucre were added to the group known as the Sanhedrin. Even Joseph of Arimathea was a member of the Sanhedrin, but he was never converted to the teachings of the Pharisees. And he was Jesus' uncle, and that's why he was able to claim Jesus' body straightly off the cross and buried him in his own sepulcher. A Jew, an Edomite Jew, would never have done any such thing. they would have preferred to leave his body out in the air to rot. Okay. Christians today are also becoming more and more alerted to, day by day, with why the so-called or self-styled Jews throughout the world for three centuries have spent uncounted sums of money to manufacture the fiction that the Judeans in the time of Jesus were Jews rather than Judeans, and that Jesus was a Jew. Christians are becoming more and more aware day by day of all the economic and political advantages accruing to the Jews as a direct result of their success in making Christians believe that Jesus was a Jew in the secondary meaning. Okay. They seek to thereby prove their kinship with Jesus, by which Christians excuse all of their crimes. Okay, so, Michael, if I'm related to you, let's say we are the sons of the same mother, and you're a criminal, and I'm not, okay? So, if I say I'm related to Michael, does that make you less? I forget which I said. Does that make either one of us less of a criminal? Right? Okay. But this is the soft-brained mush that Christians believe. Right? Just because they claim they're related to Jesus does not excuse them from all their criminality. And it's unbelievable. The mind process of Judeo-Christians is just unbelievably childish. Okay, let's continue. They emphasize this fiction to Christians constantly. That fable is fast fading and losing its former grip upon the imaginations of Christians. Now, the only way I can see this being true is because in the 1950s and 1960s, Christian identity was an emerging faith. And, you know, Dr. Wesley Swift and Bertrand Comparé, many others, William Gale, were teaching Christian identity. They were teaching that the Jews are not Israelites or Judahites. So maybe he was aware of that, and it was catching on, but it didn't last all that long. It maybe lasted for about 20 years, and, you know, the Jews had to do something about it. And what they did was they started assassinating teachers of Christian Israel faith. That's what they did, that to Gordon Kahl. I think they certainly took down William Gale's ministry. They raided his compound and destroyed it, and his ministry was scattered all over the country. So they definitely attacked directly Christian identity in the 1980s, and actually in the 1970s as well, because the group that I started out with was the Christian Patriots Defense League, headed by John Harrell, who actually had run for senator of the state of Illinois, and the Jews had to neutralize him. What they did was they sent a fake prisoner who went to John Harrell's house claiming that he was of the Christian identity faith, and would you, Mr. Harrell, protect me? The feds are after me. Would you protect me? Which he did. So then John Harrell went to jail. Well, I think he went to jail for harboring a fugitive. But the guy that they sent, who was a fake fugitive, he went free. So this is the kind of tactics they use against us. The Jews use against us. All right, so let's continue. To allege that Jesus was a Jew in the sense that during his lifetime, Jesus professed and practiced a form of religious worship known and practiced under the modern name of Judaism is false and fiction of the most blasphemous nature. If to be a so-called or self-styled Jew then or now the practice of Judaism was a requirement, then Jesus certainly was not a so-called Jew. And Bertrand Comparé explained that very well in his writings on the subject. Jesus never practiced the religion called Judaism. That religion was invented by the Pharisees. It never existed before them. Jesus abhorred and denounced the form of religious worship practiced in Judea in his lifetime, and which is known and practiced today under its new name, Judaism. That religious belief was then known as Pharisaism. Thank you very much. The Christian clergy learned that in their theological seminary days, but they have never made any attempt to make it clear to Christians. Okay? This is something every Christian clergyman should know, but I think, Michael, today they don't even teach that. The clergymen don't even learn that in their seminaries anymore. Okay? Everybody should know that Judaism is an offshoot of Pharisaism. It's not an offshoot of the Old Testament Mosaic teachings. In fact, Jesus accused them and said, you have your own religion, your own traditions, which you practice. And he referred to them as the traditions of the elders. Okay. Made up religion. Okay. So the eminent Rabbi Louis Finkelstein, the head of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, often referred to as the Vatican of Judaism, in his foreword to his first edition of his world-famous classic, The Pharisees, the Sociological Background of Their Faith, on page 21 states, ready, folks? The tradition of the elders, Pharisaism, Rabbinism, Talmudism, and Judaism are all the same belief system, but none of these are the traditions of Moses, folks. None of them. Quote, Judaism, Pharisaism became Talmudism. Talmudism became medieval Rabbinism, and medieval Rabbinism became modern Rabbinism. But throughout those changes in name, the spirit of the ancient Pharisees survives unaltered from Palestine to Babylonia, from Babylonia to North Africa, Italy, Spain, France, and Germany, from these to Poland, Russia, and Eastern Europe generally. Ancient Pharisaism has wandered, demonstrates the enduring importance which attaches to Pharisaism as a religious movement, unquote. So, Michael, is there any actual reference to the Old Testament in this statement? Okay. You there? Hold on. Michael, okay, sorry, Michael's not with us. Let me get back. And, okay, so, but there's a reference here from Palestine to Babylonia, from Babylonia to North Africa. He's talking about the Pharisaic spirit. He's not talking about ancient Babylon, because Babylonia actually still survived into the days of Yahshua Messiah. And they had a yeshiva there, or a rabbinical school, not to be confused with ancient Babylon. These are yeshivas or Talmudic institutions which have informed modern Judaism. Quote, the celebrated Rabbi Louis Finkelstein, in his great classic quoted from above, traces the origin of the form of religious worship practiced today under the present name of Judaism to its origin as Pharisaism in Judea in the time of Jesus. Rabbi Louis Finkelstein confirms that what the eminent Rabbi Adolf Moses states in his great classic Yahvism and Other Discourses, in collaboration with the celebrated Rabbi H.G. Enlow, published in 1903 by the Louisville section of the Council of Jewish Women, in which Rabbi Adolf Moses on page 1 states, and I quote, among the innumerable misfortunes which have befallen, the most fatal in its consequences is the name Judaism. Worse still, the Jews themselves, who have gradually come to call their religion Judaism. Yet neither in the biblical nor post-biblical, neither in Talmudic nor in much later times, is the term Judaism ever heard. The Bible speaks of a religion as Torah Yahweh, the instruction or the moral law revealed by Yahweh. In other places, as Yirath Yahweh, the fear and reverence of Yahweh. These and other appellations continued for many ages to stand for the religion, or Yahwism. To distinguish it from Christianity and Islam, the Jewish philosophers sometimes designated as the faith or the belief of the Jews. It was Flavius Josephus, writing for the instruction of the Greeks and Romans, who coined the term Judaism, in order to pit it against Hellenism. All right, folks, so again, now it's starting to get really good. We'll eventually get into the stab in the back by the Jews against Germany. Thanks for listening, folks. You are listening to Eurofolk Radio and Speak Free Radio, and this is Bloodlines.
Beep.